Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and I am flying solo this week on your SmackDown audio review. Usually, I am joined by Jake Barnett, but Jake is on vacation this weekend, as is Jason Powell. I'm kind of flying solo all across .net this weekend. Jason on vacation for his 40th birthday. So before we go any farther, let me jump right out and say happy birthday, Jason. I hope that you are having a great 40th birthday. I know that he is off somewhere and having a good time, and I get random emails from him that just tell me that he's off somewhere having a good time. So happy for him for that. Jake and I do this audio for you every Saturday morning, whenever Jake's not on vacation, of course. And, you know, we bring it to you all access. But it's not the only audio that's done on the site each week, but most of it is exclusive to our members. We do a WWE audio review as well on Monday nights. Jason Powell handles that duty. Jake Barnett gets together with Will Pruitt on Wednesdays, and they do a .NET countdown where they look at the best and the worst of professional wrestling each week. Will Pruitt does the TNA Impact audio review, which is sometimes all access, but mostly exclusive to our members. Jason answers a Q&A audio every week where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. This week, I am taking over those duties for him, and that will be up later today on the site exclusively for our members as well. And, of course, on Thursdays, Jason and I get together for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly. We review all the news of the week and oftentimes break news that's not made its way to the site. This week, we went a little over 2 hours. We've been trying to shrink it down some, but lots of news with the WWE conference call. Jason and I take all those numbers apart, from the financials to the pay-per-view numbers to the information about the WWE network. So a lot goes on each and every week with audio, and that is exclusive to our .NET members. Not to mention, our members also get access to the ad-free version of the site, access to the .NET member forum and .NET member blog section. If all that sounds good to you, it's only $5.50 a month, folks. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up link. Click there, and we will get you started again. $5.50 a month is all it is if you take the annual option. If you want to go month-to-month, $7.50 is all it is, and it is a great time as we head into SummerSlam to get signed up. There will be a ton of news coming out, obviously, with Brock Lesnar and Triple H facing off. We've got the Triple Threat match for the WWE Championship. The World Heavyweight Championship match is set. Those three matches are done. And Jason and I, of course, will be covering the show that night and providing another members exclusive audio that night as well as we break down what happens at SummerSlam. But SmackDown had three shows left to get ready for that SummerSlam event. This is the SmackDown that aired on August the 3rd, 2012, taped on the 31st of July in Indianapolis, Indiana. And the big news, of course, coming out of this show, we have a brand new general manager for SmackDown, AJ being the new general manager for Raw. We had to find something for SmackDown, and Vince McMahon tagged Booker T. And I got to say, this might be the greatest pick in the history of wrestling. We joke and use hyperbole and those sorts of things all the time, but swear to God, getting Booker T out of the announce booth might be the smartest thing that WWE has ever done. He has been so unbelievably bad. I was looking back. Our member forum actually has a list of some of the just asinine and insane stuff that he has said over this time that he's been on commentary. And so anything that gets Booker T out of the announce booth is a perfect move for me. So kudos to WWE for getting this one right. And Booker ought to be pretty good in this role. He is a funny guy, and he can do whatever. He can be intense when he needs to be and whatnot. I'm not the biggest Booker T fan. I certainly understand his contributions to the business, and I don't hate the guy or anything like that. But in the ring, I always thought he was very entertaining as well. But it just doesn't connect with me as much as he does with other people. But I think he will fit well into this role, and it's a little bit different from Teddy Long, so it's not just back to Teddy Long again, even though Teddy's going to be around for a while and be connected to Booker T. So a little bit different, something on SmackDown. Pretty good job by Vince and company in doing this again, getting him out of that announce booth, letting it just be Josh Matthews and Michael Cole. I would rather it be Josh Matthews and an actual wrestler who can be a heel color commentator. I think Matthews is good enough to be let loose and to carry a show with a color guy. But we'll see what happens if Cole stays there for a while. I guess he's serving as the color man for right now. We will see how that plays out over the next few weeks. But let's run through this show. Other than that, it wasn't a very newsworthy show, so we can just kind of go through it from top to bottom here. We get the opening video, the pyro. Josh Matthews welcomes us to SmackDown. Lillian Garcia introduces Mr. McMahon, who comes out, and Michael Cole checks in on commentary to tell us it's been the first time in 3 years that Vince McMahon has been on SmackDown. At least I think that's what he said. It may have been 3 years since he kicked off SmackDown. I thought Vince had been on not terribly long ago, but I could be wrong about that. But at any rate, it's been 3 years at least since Vince McMahon has kicked off Friday Night SmackDown, the way Michael Cole put it. Vince came out, and with very little ado, he ran through what he was looking for in the qualities of a GM and introduced Booker T as the GM. Booker T came out, shook Vince's hand. Vince takes off. Booker T starts cutting his first promo as the GM and began to announce his first, you know, whatever. He's like, let's get this party started. He started to say something, and he gets cut off by Alberto Del Rio's music. Del Rio just walks out to the ring. He doesn't drive the car. No Ricardo Rodriguez that I saw. Del Rio gets in the ring, shakes his hand, congratulates Booker on becoming the new general manager. Kind of sucks up to him a little bit. Booker T's not having any of it. He takes the mic and says, you know, at least make it sound like you're serious instead of coming out here and just trying to suck up. Del Rio says, you know what, and then he started, you know, complaining about the things that Del Rio said about Sheamus last week and on Raw. Del Rio said, you know what, all those things are true. Sheamus is a hooligan. He is, you know, he is better than Sheamus. And he's not upset about anything he said. He believes everything that he said. And, you know, that's kind of that. Sheamus's music hit. A lot of S's in that. Sheamus's music hit. He comes to the ring. He congratulates Booker T, offers to buy him be the first one to buy him a pint. Booker T, of course, accepts that from Sheamus. He turns to Del Rio at that point, tells him that he's proud of where he came from, you know, and then kind of runs down Del Rio for being a chicken and says, are you really going to not wrestle until SummerSlam? Del Rio said, yes, that's correct. He's not. Booker T cuts him off and said that both of those men were going to compete tonight in this very ring. He said that quite a few times in this promo. In this very ring, they were both going to compete tonight. Del Rio said, look, I don't care who you are. I am not going to compete tonight, and that's that. Booker T said, obviously your hearing is bad because I am the boss. I am the general manager, and you will compete later tonight against Randy Orton. Now go change. Del Rio storms out of the ring at that point. Booker T turns around and tells Sheamus, don't get too comfortable because your match is next against this guy. And Lord Tensai's music hits, and he comes out to the ring as we go into commercial break. You know, it was kind of a cut-and-dry opening to SmackDown. It wasn't anything to write home about. It wasn't, you know, great stuff. It wasn't terrible stuff. I was already in a great mood just because, again, it's no more Booker T in commentary. And, you know, but it wasn't, they didn't do anything. They didn't really build a whole lot for SummerSlam. They just kind of went back to the same thing they're saying, that Del Rio's not going to compete, but he was forced to compete. Sheamus had to compete. And this is kind of the theme for the SmackDown that you're going to see as we go through the show, is a lot of stuff happens, but it's kind of meaningless. It's kind of wasted time. It's very holding pattern. I mean, obviously, Sheamus coming out and getting a win and, you know, Del Rio being able to heal it up. And, I mean, all those sorts of things are important. Don't get me wrong. We have to have those sorts of things. But they seem... It's like lip service in a lot of ways. They pay lip service to Sheamus and Del Rio's feud. They pay lip service to what's going on in SmackDown. It doesn't feel important. It doesn't feel necessary. It doesn't feel like it accomplishes anything. It's just, well, we have to show Sheamus look strong, so we'll just let him beat somebody, and there you go. And they just, if that makes any sense to what I'm saying, and they just, I don't know, SmackDown, it comes and goes in lull. It's really funny. It's a very undulating show because some weeks they make a lot of big impact. They have great matches. A lot of stuff goes on that makes sense, that propels storylines forward. This week, you know, it felt like a holding pattern. I mean, a part of it is some of these feuds are stale in and of themselves, in that they, you know, the Del Rio and Sheamus especially, you know, we've been seeing this for a while. Sheamus got the clean win at the last pay-per-view. It doesn't feel fresh. And so when all they do is just have them come out and yell at each other for a minute and wrestle in opposite matches, it just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't propel the storyline forward. But we'll move on from here. I just you know, as you hear me go through this, as we go through the show, you'll hear me say a couple of times, you know, this was kind of unnecessary and kind of ho-hum. And when I say ho-hum, I don't necessarily mean that that moment in and of itself was boring per se. It's just that it didn't mean anything, and so overall it was just a waste of time. So after the commercial, we did get our first match of the night. It was Sheamus defeating Tensai in 13 minutes. Sakamoto, of course, at ringside, and no cracks from Tensai. No, it was hard for me not to. I probably shouldn't do that. My point of doing that was because, you know, Tensai, of course, put out the video of Sakamoto driving around and said it's dangerous to ride with an Asian or with a Japanese person. I can't remember exactly how he put it, but I think he said Japanese man because they're dangerous, and he screamed at him to open his eyes. It was insensitive and it was stupid. It was also a lot to do about nothing. Sakamoto was there. Tensai has worked extensively in Japan, and you know he's a big star there. He was trying to be a heel. It was what it was. It was kind of dumb, but I honestly thought this was going to be the Tensai squash match, you know, let's feed him to Sheamus and teach him not to say stupid stuff like that, because that happens all the time in WWE. But it wasn't the case. I was very happy to see that. Got a good 13-minute match on it. Tensai in control for most of the match. Sheamus hit all his big spots, ducks a clothesline in the corner, and comes off the ropes for the bro kick for the victory. You know, again, a fun match, didn't mean any damn thing, kind of a waste of time in the sense of character progression, but, you know, not a bad roughly 13-minute match, and, I wouldn't go out of my way to see it, but if you're sitting there and it comes on, or if you're wondering, well, should I, you know, I want to watch, kind of want to watch SmackDown, what do you think? Yeah, I mean, it's worth sitting through. It's a fun match. Tensai, you know, works well here. Sheamus, is a big guy and can get a lot out of Tensai with those two, you know, because they're both big guys and they're both very athletic. So, we see some spots that we haven't seen necessarily out of Tensai working with some of the smaller guys because they're not able to carry him. And when I say carry, I don't mean as in he's terrible, but carry as in handle his weight, handle his size like Sheamus can. So, a pretty good match. We're sitting through if you get an opportunity. We go backstage to where Eve is sitting in a chair in Booker T's office waiting on him to show up. Booker T walks in and she, you know, said she wanted to be one of the first to congratulate him. She reminds him of how important and helpful she was in the John Laurinaitis regime, and said if there were any positions in his administration that she would fit into, she would really appreciate consideration. Booker T started to address it when Teddy Long walks up, and Teddy and Booker have a big moment where they're real happy with each other, and Booker offers Teddy a job and says, you know, I want to make you senior advisor because you've done this before. I'm going to need your help. Teddy accepts. He turns around and sees Eve and says, oh, you're still here. Sorry, all the positions in my administration are full. He then asks Teddy to escort Eve. Teddy agrees, puts his arm out and says, Eve. Eve looks at both of them, disgusted for a minute, and then shoves Teddy's arm away and storms out the door into commercial break. When we come back, Antonio Cesaro and Oksana were already in the ring. Cole compared Booker T picking Teddy Long as an assistant like John McCain picking Sarah Palin. Josh Matthews just shook his head and kind of laughed at ringside. It's a really dumb joke, I think that most people know that at this point that I am involved in politics and I'm on the right side of the political spectrum, if you will. Not the biggest John McCain and Sarah Palin fans, but that notwithstanding, it was not the insult to Palin or McCain or anything like that. It's dated. You know, it's 4 years ago, and I guess Dick Cheney did just make the comment about McCain picking Palin was a mistake, and maybe that's what they're playing off of. But it just seemed weird to come up with that as the line, and I'm sure that line was fed to Cole. So, that's Vince McMahon who's, you know, let's crack jokes about something that happened 4 friggin' years ago. And not just happened 4 years ago, but happened 4 years ago and is now kind of irrelevant because we have a new Republican nominee who's going to pick a new vice presidential running mate. It was one of those moments where, you know, something said and it sticks out so much, you just kind of stand there and look at it and go, what the hell just happened? Did that, you know, it was just strange and awkward and everything else. but I've spent too much time on this, really. But it just when I was sitting there watching, I thought, why that? Why, you know, of all the comparisons, a four-year-old joke that is more irrelevant now than it even was, say, a year ago, because now we have, you know, new people picking running mates. But anyway, Cesaro takes the mic in the ring, of course, Antonio Cesaro, the former Claudio Castagnoli of Ring of Honor and Independent Wrestling, saying, Cesaro says he wants to say hello in five different languages, which he does. Santino Marella makes his ring entrance. That was all just weird and meaningless and led to an even more weird and meaningless match. Antonio Cesaro defeating Santino Marella at 2 minutes and 34 seconds. Santino goes for the Cobra very quickly. He actually hits it. Cesaro falls and scoots like hell over to the ring, gets his leg underneath the rope, which the ref doesn't see, even though his foot is hanging off the edge of the ring. The ref doesn't see it until just before the 3 count. He explains to Santino that he had to stop the count for that reason. Santino said he was not aware of that rule. He goes to the floor to gather Cesaro, who shoves him into the retaining wall. And when Santino climbs back in the ring, Cesaro hits him with his finisher to defeat him again, second time in 2 weeks. The announcers did point out that Santino was the one that wanted this match, this rematch, and now that he's been beat twice, it might be time for Cesaro to get a U.S. title shot, which I'm sure he will, and I'm sure he will win, and that's a good thing. Yes, the title is weak right now, but a guy like Cesaro that they're obviously looking to push should be able to carry that title for some time, bring some prestige back to it, and it will be nice to see him involved, hopefully in a program that's meaningful in some way. After commercial, Max Stryker is backstage with Daniel Bryan. He plays the video of the whole psychiatric garbage that went on Raw on Monday. Stryker asked Bryan if he has any comments, and Bryan said no. And he said he would be saying no more often. He says the people in the audience didn't have the right to say yes anymore. They were stealing his catchphrase. He kind of went crazy from there and started screaming no, no, no. They, of course, were showing this on the Titantron in the arena. They cut to a video feed of that, or a shot of that, of people in the crowd watching it. All the lights go off as he's chanting, no, no, no. Chris Jericho makes his ring entrance, followed by Christian and Kane going into the commercial break. And just for 2 seconds, real fast, when the hell did Kane become a babyface? I mean, I realize he's been beating up Bryan and all that sort of stuff, but... you know, he's the monster. He'll beat up anybody. He just wants to, he just wants to hurt people. So it played into his character fine, but he's teaming with the baby faces. I don't know. It's like, just because he almost got kissed by AJ, that makes him a baby face? There's not been a baby face turn, and it just seems strange that they're now just positioning him as a baby face. I know he's getting cheered, but it's Kane. They can, you put him out there, have him chokeslam one person, and bam, all his heat's back. It's just a weird moment for me. After commercial, we get the heels making their introduction, The Miz, followed by Vicky Guerrero, who does trash Chris Jericho and said, unlike some people, this is the guy who can win the big one. She introduces Dolph Ziggler, and they round it out with Daniel Bryan for a third match of the night. Miz, Dolph Ziggler, and Daniel Bryan defeating Chris Jericho, Christian, and Kane in about 12 minutes and 30 seconds. It was a pretty good match. The opening stuff is what it is. Jericho's very good here. He shows a lot of aggression. He's flying around the ring. The crowd was really into his act and him getting his hands on Ziggler. That's going to be a fun program heading into SummerSlam. Yes, there are a ton of sites out there reporting that Chris Jericho, because he said in an interview after the 14th, I'm done, he's advertised for like 6 dates or 4 dates or something like that after the 14th. He is advertised for SummerSlam. He is advertised for the August 27th, I believe it is. Yeah, August 27th edition of Raw, which is not the Raw after SummerSlam. He's not advertised for that one on the 20th, but he is advertised for the next week. And then, of course, after that, he's not advertised for anything. He is not advertised for any house shows after this weekend. And again, Chris Jericho lies. That's what he does. I don't mean that ugly. They're all liars to some degree. That's part of kayfabe and working within the wrestling industry. But, I mean, that's his shtick. He lies about when he's coming and when he's going, and as he should, because all those things should be surprises and used for storyline purposes and whatnot. So, please, if you're going, he's done after the 14th, no, he's not. They're going to wrestle at SummerSlam. There's no question about that in my mind. Have I been told that? No, but I believe it in my heart of hearts. The finish on this comes, of course, we get the breakdown where everybody's in the ring and everybody gets knocked out of the ring. You've got Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho are the legal men. Jericho puts Bryan in that high arch, original lion tamer where he puts the knee down the back of the head and really wrenches Bryan up. Bryan's the only guy I've seen that can really takes that move that way right now in WWE. Everybody else takes pretty much just a plain Boston crab. I bet Ziggler would be able to take it that way too, but just kind of wanted to point that out. The only time I ever see that anymore is when Daniel Bryan's in the ring with Jericho. Ziggler does run in at that point with the Money in the Bank briefcase. He goes to hit Jericho with it. Jericho breaks the hold, hits a code breaker, and Ziggler rolls to the floor. So he doesn't actually hit Jericho, but that does allow Bryan enough time to recover and hook Jericho from behind for the roll-up victory. Again, 12 minutes and 30 seconds roughly on that match. Again, a fun match worth sitting through, and you know, they had a lot of fun at the end. And again, the crowd was really into Jericho, who was working very hard in this match. He was flying around the ring. We'll cut backstage to where Matt Stryker is with Randy Orton. He introduces him as returning from a two-month layoff. Orton put over being back and how much he missed being on Raw and SmackDown whenever he's gone and how he hated it. He said he's not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. That's pretty good, Orton, because, you know, if you get suspended again, you're done, you're fired and done for at least a year. He said that Del Rio was the number one contender only because he didn't have to face Orton. He said that he was going to give the people what they wanted, which was a perfectly executed RKO on Del Rio. It was a, you know, a typical Randy Orton cut-and-dry promo, or cut-and-paste promo, and paint-by-numbers, however you want to call it. It's just the same stuff we always get from Orton. But, you know, one thing just here real fast, and you know, we talked about this, Jason and I talked about this in .NET Weekly, Orton has been very vocal about time off and about how he believes that, you know, guys should be given more time off and that sort of thing. And this is, you know, he thought it would do a lot for everyone, and including creatively. And this is a prime story of it. I mean, yes, he's off because he was suspended. And I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to take up for that or anything like that. But just, he was gone for 60 days. And he comes back and he says, yeah, Del Rio is the number one contender. He's the number one contender because I wasn't here. That's instant story out of the box. You know, that is ready to go just because he's been there. He's been in the main event. He's been gone now. He took 60 days off and came back, or was sent home for 60 days as the facts remain. But still, he was gone for 60 days. He comes back. He's got an instant story out of the box. He's got an instant feud out of the box because he was gone for 60 days. I mean, think about that. It did not hurt Randy Orton in the least to be gone for 60 days. Nobody really missed him all that much. Yes, I understand on the house show tour, it can be kind of whatever. But as much as WWE tours and gets around, there's going to be plenty of opportunity to see Randy Orton this year if he, you know, if SmackDown came to your town or near your town while he was suspended. You either had an opportunity prior to the 60 days, or you'll have another opportunity after the 60 days this year. So I don't believe it hurts house show business all that much for these guys to be given the time off like this. And again, creatively, because he was gone for 60 days, he instantaneously has a story. So, Orton makes some good points here. He shouldn't have done drugs, whatever it was he was busted for, but he does have a good point about time off, how it could help everyone. After commercial, Jinder Mahal is at ringside putting his hat in the case. He steps in the ring, and then Ryback's music hit. Ryback comes out with a bloodshot. His left eye could not have been more bloodshot. I don't know if dude got pink eye or if he got water in his, but it was bad, bad bloodshot. I don't know if it was bothering him or it's just, you know, what exactly it was, but right eye looked okay. Left eye looked like he had been smoking a doobie on just that side of his face. We get our first promo, at least that I've seen, from Ryback. We get a cut-in from him. He did not cut it at the ring. It was a cut-in from backstage. Again, he still had the bloodshot eye then, so I don't know when exactly that was taped, but he said that the rule of the jungle is eat or be eaten. It's the only rule that he understands. He's in WWE because everywhere he looks, he sees food and then says, feed me more. That became our fourth match of the night. Ryback defeating Jinder Mahal by disqualification at a minute and 6 seconds. Mahal hit a high knee, and that was about all his offense in the match. Ryback pushes or kicks him to the floor, I believe it was. and follows him down there to the floor. Mahal grabbed the microphone, hit him in the head with it, which caused the DQ. Ryback completely no-sold it, and Mahal ran for the hills, and Ryback was in the ring chanting, "Feed me more," minute and 6 second match on a DQ with Jinder Mahal running away again. This works if people care about Jinder Mahal, but newsflash, nobody seems to care about Jinder Mahal. I mean, in any significant way. And Ryback is getting boring. I mean, he really is. He's just kind of floating around, and I'm sure he'll get the big win on Mahal at SummerSlam. It'll be an unannounced match, and he'll go out there and totally destroy Mahal and look like a beast. And I don't care. I don't know if any of you guys listening care, but I think right now he's just not very good. It's not his fault. It's what creative is doing with him. He's just in this really sad holding pattern, much like the guys who we saw when we cut backstage, the primetime players dancing around, acting a fool, just got their arms around each other and power walking, swinging their arms, going, "Millions of dollars, millions of dollars, millions of dollars." They walk up on a T-shirt vendor. They ask where the primetime player shirt is. They say, "Little Jimmy's got a shirt." Titus grabs one, throws it in the guy's face, calls him Herman Munster, and they storm off with AW in tow, still doing their millions of dollars gimmick. Into the commercial break, and when we come back, our fifth match of the night is... Well, excuse me, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead there. Fifth match of the night, R-Truth defeated by Darren Young. Darren Young defeating R-Truth at a minute and 49 seconds. Kofi Kingston at ringside with R-Truth. Titus O'Neil and AW at ringside with Darren Young. Minute and 49 seconds. They wrestled for 15 seconds. Honest to God, they wrestled for 15 seconds, and then it just broke down. Titus got involved, which got Kofi Kingston involved, which got AW involved. Everybody gets involved, messing with each other in this match. And we get Kofi getting beat up by Titus O'Neil at ringside. Truth stops long enough to kick O'Neil to stop him from beating up his partner, which allows Darren Young to grab him and hit his finisher for the win, and they celebrate in the ring. Blah, 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 blah. The tag division is so friggin' bad. We keep being promised, oh, we're going to get new emphasis on the tag team division. There's not. It's a lie. There is nothing in the tag division right now. They're doing this thing, but it's so dreadful, and you've got Crime Time 2.0 and the primetime players, and they're funny. Don't get me wrong. I think O'Neil and Young have been hilarious at times. The dumb thing they did with Zeke that time when they were backstage with Zeke and Yoshitatsu and started messing with Zeke. I mean, it was funny, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't give him any heat. It doesn't, it's so bad in the tag division right now, and I love tag team wrestling, and they're just not doing a great job with it. After commercial, we get the video recap of CM Punk, Big Show, John Cena, everything that played out on Monday, and then tout videos of people. Some of those tout videos were really special, really, really special. I was concerned about a few of those guys. We get a video recapping Booker T's announcement as general manager at the top of the show. Booker's backstage on the phone. Layla walks up, and they start jive talking and dancing around and being all excited about his new position. When Cody Rhodes walks in, Cody says it won't take but a second. He just wanted to congratulate Booker. He thought it nice that a superstar of his age was able to continue to be involved with the business, and he hoped the fact that he ended Booker T's career earlier that year would not ruin their working relationship. Booker got in his face and put him in a match next week with Sin Cara. Cody Rhodes stormed off, and Booker and Layla went back to celebrating. Not a very exciting moment, but they did give people a reason to tune in next week. They did announce a match for next week. Very, very rarely do we see that on SmackDown, so I'm not going to hate on this because they did do that. But, not great stuff. They played up on the history of Cody and Booker T just a little bit. My guess is we'll probably see a little bit more of that over the next couple of months. Randy Orton made his entrance after commercial. Del Rio was out with Ricardo Rodriguez for our sixth and final match of the night, your main event. Randy Orton defeating Alberto Del Rio by disqualification at 6 minutes and 14 seconds. Del Rio looked good for most of this match. Orton got in a couple of quick strikes at the beginning, but Del Rio settled in control. Orton starts running through all his offense, hits the DDT, the rope DDT, sets up for the RKO when Ricardo Rodriguez jumps in, hits Orton to stop him. That causes disqualification. He gets dumped to ringside. Del Rio and Orton scrap some more. You've got Del Rio trying to go for that cross arm breaker, but Orton escapes and hits a drop kick that knocks him to the floor, knocks Del Rio to the floor. He's daring Del Rio to get back in the ring. Del Rio and Ricardo backing up the ramp, not having any of it, when Sheamus runs down, grabs Del Rio, rolls him into the ring, and you get the RKO from from Randy Orton as Sheamus watches on the ramp or on the stage. Randy's music hits. He's standing tall over Del Rio to close the show. And I'm looking at my time now, and I realize that I've really flown to this episode, but that's how it was. And this match is the main event, the prime example of something that didn't mean a whole lot. Yeah, Sheamus got over on Del Rio a little bit, but, and I think this is the thing, is that it doesn't mean much right now, at least this match. This is just my guess. I've said this all along. I'm not convinced that Alberto Del Rio versus Sheamus in a singles match is the World Heavyweight Championship match at SummerSlam. I don't believe that. Rey Mysterio sitting out there, Randy Orton is back. Would not be surprised if all four guys end up in that match. Would not be surprised if either Rey or Randy end up in that match. My guess is Randy Orton ends up in that match. It's another triple threat, so you have two triple threat matches for the championship. We've seen WWE do that before. I mean, they did it before with the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, but I also think that they've just done this where they put, you know, the same match on as far as two triple threat matches. And I think that's what we end up with here. I think Randy Orton gets involved because I think that's next for he and Sheamus. I think they do that probably at Survivor Series. I know Jason wants them to hold off to WrestleMania, and they might. They might ultimately hold off to WrestleMania. But it feels like they're going to go to it sooner rather than later, so I think Orton gets involved, and that goes back to this point kind of starting. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that, but we're at the end of the show. You know, and we're here in about 30 minutes because an uneventful show. There was not a lot to report afterwards. Yes, we had the new GM, but the GM, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Yes, we got the match announcement for next week, but it's Cody Rhodes, who's been marginalized, versus Sin Cara, who's, you know, just, he's lost all of his heat from the time he debuted because of injuries and bad attitudes and wellness violation and all that stuff. So he's just not as special as he once was. And SmackDown just floundering this week. They didn't do great stuff with anybody. No Damian Sandow this week. That was upsetting. No Rey Mysterio this week. A rather cut and dry, uneventful SmackDown, and not a lot to write home about. So, again, not a bad show. If you're wondering if you should see it, it's okay to sit through the stuff. You know, much like we see a lot of weeks, the stuff in between the top of the second hour and the main event is kind of bleh. A couple of short matches and things that don't really mean a whole lot, and disqualifications and whatnot, and just, you know, just some garbage kind of filler stuff thrown in there. But that's par for the course. Even when we're raving about a SmackDown, it's almost always guaranteed to have moments where you're like, yeah, you can skip all over this. So not a boring SmackDown in the sense of action. Again, Orton Del Rio was pretty good. It was 6 minutes, so, you know, can't do a whole lot there, but not bad. The sixth man was a lot of fun to watch. Jericho was really good there. The opening match with Tensai and Sheamus was surprisingly good. So things worth watching, but, you know, if you're like, well, I've got 2 hours and I just don't know if I should spend it on SmackDown, you'd probably be satisfied finding something else you do that you enjoy. Just not a great show, not one that has you on the edge of your seat, and certainly not one that leaves you wanting to tune in next week. But I hope you do tune in next week, and when you come back, I hope you come back and listen to us next week as well. Jake Barnett will be back joining me, so you don't just have to listen to my voice the entire time. And of course, that's not the only audio we do. You want access to all that audio I talked about earlier, the Raw audio, the Impact Wrestling audio, Jason's Q&A, JakeandWills.net countdown, Jason and I on .NET Weekly. All you have to do, sign up to be a .NET member. You get access to all the audio, the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. On the right-hand side of the page, look for the .NET member sign-up link. $7.50 for 30 days. If you take the annual option, we'll knock $2 off, save you $24 over the course of the year. good time to sign up. Thank you, everyone who is a .NET member who's listening, and for those who are not .NET members, consider signing up, but thank you for listening as well. Thank you to everyone for your support of .NET and for reading .NET, for making .NET your home for your wrestling news. My name is Chris Shore. I will see you guys back next week with Jake Barnett. Until then, happy birthday, Jason Powell. Lordy, Jason's 40. Everyone take care.